Hi there, I'm Greg from Kapow. Visit us at kapow.com to check out our unique collection of everyday reusable products designed to help you do more with less. C-U-P-P-O-W.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone. I'm Julia Szabo, and also known as Pet Reporter, and I'm here sitting in for wonderful Celia Kutcher, who is the brilliant host and creator of Animal Instinct. So here we are, and today we have a very special guest. She is the founder of an extraordinary animal sanctuary, which is really the first of its kind. It's a people-centered animal sanctuary called Seer Farms, whose mission is keeping families together and animals safe. So please welcome Laura Popple. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to Animal Instinct. Thank you for being our guest. So...
Delighted to be here.
Well, I'm glad. So, you have created something really exceptional, and I hope that we can start by talking about a little bit about the circumstances that might lead people to think about the unthinkable, which is to give up their pets. Tell us a little bit about that, because I know that in very hard economic times, such as we've had for the past 8 or so years, a lot of people have been forced to do this, and a lot of other people who don't understand that sort of judge and pass judgment. So tell us a little bit about what might lead to that.
Well, you're right, Julia. And about 8 years ago, we saw a sudden surge because of the economic downturn in people who were struggling with what to do with their pets because they were losing their homes, often to foreclosure, sometimes to eviction because they couldn't pay their rent because they had lost their job and were struggling. And time and again, what you heard from the people in this circumstance was that they were able to get friends, family were being generous, letting them stay on their couch, had a spare room. They were welcome. The kids were welcome. And at the last minute, what they were discovering was that their pets were not welcome when they were going to be staying on in somebody's home because of allergies, because there are other pets in the house, because they lived in a community where pets weren't allowed. And at the very last minute, people were finding that they were having to make a very difficult decision about what to do about their animal, who often was the best friend of their child, who was now going to be taken away from his home, his school, his friends, and the family was desperate to keep that pet with their child. Or that pet was the emotional support for every family member, for the parents as well. And so we started a community service organization specifically targeting that family, the family who is going through some kind of catastrophic life event and is desperate not to lose their pet, even though in that moment they're not sure how they're going to be able to care for them. They're not sure what roof is going to be over their head, much less the head of their children and their pets. And what we found almost immediately was that the economic crisis, although the impetus for the founding of Seer Farms, that's our organization, that was not the only life crisis that would present a family with this kind of struggle. In fact, there were many other catastrophic events where families would suddenly find themselves without a home or unable to have their pet with them in their home. Specifically, domestic violence situations, domestic violence shelters, more and more will take, they'll take the women, they'll take the kids. There's much more recognition in community that that is something that needs to be addressed. And yet, most domestic violence shelters cannot take the pets. And so women and children were staying in very dangerous situations because the pets could not accompany them out of the house and into safety.
Wow. And of course, in a situation like that that's so emotionally fraught, that's where people really need a best friend on four legs, right?
Oh, absolutely. And another situation where we found almost from the beginning, but we're seeing more and more of it now, is medical crises. And these medical crises follow a couple of different patterns. In the one case, people are going into the hospital for what they know is going to be surgery and post-surgical rehabilitation away from their home. Many of them are seniors. They're going in for cardiac care. They're going in for bypasses. And they their pet is their lifeline. It is the emotional support network that they have. Many of them, their children are far-flung around the country or around the globe. And so they will make the decision to stay with their pet rather than get life-saving surgery because they have no one to take care of their pet. They can't afford to board it in a traditional boarding facility, and so they're going to stay there until they figure something out.
Wow.
Alternately, especially as new drugs become available, that people, especially with cancer, are finding themselves with immune-compromised systems where they can stay in their home while they get stem cell treatment, while they get chemo. They can be in their home environment, but their pets can't be there with them while they're going through treatment. So now the pet has to be somewhere else. They can stay home. And they're desperate again. We had one woman who used to come, and she would simply, we were holding her pet while she was going through cancer treatment, chemo, and she would come and she'd sit in the car at our facility, and we would bring the pet out to the car. She couldn't even open the window. But just being able to see her dog was giving her the hope, the strength to go on, to get through the treatment so that her dog could go home and they could be reunited as a family.
Wow, isn't that beautiful? Well, again, we are talking to Laura Popple, the founder of Seer Farms. That's S-E-E-R Farms. plural.org. Please check it out online. Laura, it takes a very special person to think of such a creative solution to a problem that plagues so many families, and it took such a long time. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to this? Was there an inspirational person or event, something that really motivated you to do this amazing thing?
Well, the easier answer is I like to blame my parents, who both were very much about, and my mother still is, about animals. And we always had, the pets were part of the family. And really, it's part of what motivated me is the recognition that for so many people, decision-making about how you're going to proceed through life is made with all the members of your family as part of that decision. And in many cases, all the members of the family include the four-legged ones or the finned ones or the winged ones. The sort of the longer real answer is that I went through graduate school and as a psychologist. I'm trained as a psychologist. I am a information processing specialist, and I was in higher education publishing for 20 years. That career gave me the luxury of being involved in several different nonprofit organizations in a management capacity. So I was comfortable with the idea that if you are in the world and see something that feels like a solvable problem for which there seems to be no solution in play at the moment, there's a mechanism for trying to address it. And that is, you can put together a nonprofit organization who, if you have like-minded people that you can engage and get excited about what you're doing, you can put together that organization to address the need that you see. So back during Katrina, up until Katrina, I was I had several different organizations, but I was an active volunteer and leader. However, I was a...
Oh, and just to interrupt, we're talking about 2005 Hurricane Katrina, just to remind everybody who was born yesterday. Okay, just saying.
At that time, although I was involved in other organizations, when it came to the Red Cross, I was a check-writing supporter. I gave them money, and I worked other places. Other areas got my passion. And then in 2005, when Hurricane Katrina struck the Gulf Coast, all of a sudden, the images that were coming out of the Gulf Coast were not just the individuals, the people who were being so desperately affected, but it was also the animals, who many, the famous pictures of the people left clinging to their roofs with their animals sort of strapped.
And standing underwater and holding their pets.
And leave their animals behind.
Yep.
And at that moment, I said, you know what, I'm going down there. I'm going to help because I can help there. I want to. And so I trained quickly with the Red Cross. They were doing some sort of very quick training, and I went down. I was, because of my background, I registered as a disaster relief worker, and I ran a shelter in Deep East, Texas. And I was running that shelter at the time that Hurricane Rita struck the Gulf Coast. So we had sort of two hurricanes back-to-back in that area. Rita was not nearly as devastating, of course. However, it came right on the heels of such devastation and such emotional vulnerability of all of the people in that area. Everyone evacuated, and they evacuated with their pets during that storm because they saw what happened during Katrina. And so now as an American Red Cross shelter manager, I was confronted with a conflict because the Red Cross at that time still could not allow, they weren't doing anything around pets in shelters. And here were all of these evacuees showing up with dogs and cats and mice and gerbils. And so we convinced the local business to let us establish a shelter in that business. And so we ran a bi-located, probably one of the first bi-located shelters for pets with their people. And you know, so that was in 2005, and it was a most extraordinary experience. Reinforced for me the commitment, the connection that people have with their pets. And then I came home and I resumed my life as a higher education publishing professional. But that was sort of in the back of my mind. And so when in 2008 we started seeing these reports of people who were losing their homes to the economic crisis and struggling with what to do with their pets, I thought, you know, it feels a little familiar. I think we can put something together that can help people transition. That's what they were looking for. That's what people reported they wanted. They needed some place to put their pets while they were getting through this devastating crisis that was affecting their lives, and they didn't want to lose their pet for the long term. And so we established Deer Farms, and which is located in Jackson. We started with a facility there. And
Jackson, New Jersey, right? Jackson, New Jersey.
Jackson, New Jersey.
Okay.
And we have, it was clear we were always full. It was clear that there was a need for the service that we were offering. And then Superstorm Sandy threatened and then struck the New Jersey area. And we suddenly catapulted into an essential role as part of the recovery movement. We still have Sandy animals because so many people were so adversely affected by the storm. And they were desperate, desperate not to lose their pets. They had lost their homes. They lost everything. And they were being displaced for so long. And so since that time, we have expanded. We now have two facilities and a much larger foster network. And we just this past February reunited the 1,000th pet with their owner.
Oh, wow. Isn't that wonderful? It's a magical number. Well, you really were like sent from heaven to help in this mission. Tell us, what animals do you have that are very dear to you that you can't imagine being without?
I have always been a dog and cat owner. Since I was a kid, I've had both dogs and cats in my life. And even today, I have a pair of, I refer to them as the Butterscotch Boys. They're a pair of sibling cats who my father had picked out for me. And I have a pair of dogs that are both rescues. For much of my life, I have had American Eskimos. I don't right now, but those were the rescue dog that I've always been particularly attached to. And I've just since, I snuck the cats into my college housing arrangement.
That's great.
I'm sure that everywhere in my life, my pets were going to be a part of who I was and how I move forward.
That's awesome. One thing that I think is so amazing about Sear Farms, especially, is that you don't discriminate against any breed, especially my favorite breed or non-breed, the pit bull. And tell us something about that. You're totally equal opportunity or equal opportunity.
Well, as a matter of fact, not only do we not discriminate, we end up with a disproportionate number of pit bulls among our residents. And that is not a surprise because there are so many breed restrictions in housing, and we are serving people who are struggling with housing situations. And so if you have been living in your home and you have your own insurance, you've been able to make whatever arrangement that is to make sure that your insurance either covers your pit bull or doesn't realize your pit bull is your pit bull. However, once you have lost your home to foreclosure and now you're renting, a landlord often has their hands tied by those same insurance policies that restrict against pit bulls. And so there are fewer opportunities for people who are renting to find the houses that will actually allow them to have restricted breeds. And so those animals end up with us while the families struggle to find some place that will take them. Likewise, if you're just going to be living for that transition period in Aunt Edna's house, and Aunt Edna said, sure, honey, go ahead, you can come, go ahead, you can bring the kids, it'll be okay. A dog? Oh, a dog. That's a, what kind of dog? Yorkie? You know, a little Shih Tzu? Fine. You say pit bull, and she says, oh, I'm so sorry, that dog can't come.
Right, so, that's not a kid.
We do get more pit bulls than I think there are pit bulls out in the population. But we've also had some, we've had some very sweet, we've had a lot of Dobermans, and several of them have been just ridiculously sweet dogs. We had one who carried a baby blanket around with him for the entire length of his stay with us. And really, there's nothing quite so charming as a giant Doberman with soft ears and a baby blanket in his mouth.
That's adorable. So now, tell us a little bit about the process. If somebody's in trouble, the first thing they should do is send you an email, right? info@searfarms.org?
That's exactly right. It's info@searfarms.org. We really prefer we prefer email because it allows us to get back to you with written documentation, because there are certain veterinary requirements that all animals that come to us must meet. Like a traditional kennel, these are multi-animal environments, and we need to make sure that any animal coming in is not going to get sick and is not going to make anyone sick when they're there. So we want to be very clear about what those veterinary requirements are and what the family obligations are. We also want to make clear what the family opportunities are. We really encourage visiting. We have a reunion rate of about 80%.
Wow.
So 8 in 10 of the animals placed with us eventually go home, and we really encourage that to be sooner rather than later. We want that bed for somebody else. And we find that if we're able to keep the connection alive, then people are just thinking. They're single-mindedly focused on how do they get their animal back. They don't want it staying with us long-term. They want it back in their life. That's why they placed the dog or cat or bunny with us to begin with. And so we encourage people to visit. We encourage that you can take your dog for an overnight because you're going out of state and you're visiting your sister who's going to let you have your dog with you. Great. Come pick it up. Take your dog home with you for a couple of days. That's terrific. We have, because we have multiple locations, we will evaluate the animal and make some determinations about where they're placed. And that often can be challenging because, you know, it's not always the closest location for somebody. Generally speaking, our dogs are placed in our South Jersey location, which is more of a traditional kennel, and therefore and has more dog-friendly handlers. Cats are generally placed in our Jackson location, which has a series of indoor-outdoor cat environments, and so it's sort of better suited, and it generally has better cat handlers in Jackson.
And all their locations are in New Jersey, right?
Both of our locations are in New Jersey,
both,
yes.
Right.
We do, if the last thing that is preventing you from taking your pet back once they've been staying with us for a while is transport home, we'll get that animal home for you. Because, again, we want, our goal is to get you all reunited. So, in fact, right this minute, we are planning and looking for the funding for a transport of 5 animals to Texas for 3 different families, all of whom have sort of come to a place where they can now take their pets back at roughly the same time. None of them, however, have the wherewithal at the moment to come back and collect their animals.
And okay, so everybody has to get on Twitter now and promote this and tweet this out at Sear Farms on Twitter and help get funding and help for this transport. All right, so listeners who love animals, you can be a checkbook supporter or check writing supporter, as you were saying before, or you can do this or both. But let's help get the word out. Just want to say it.
No, thank you. That's absolutely true. And, you know, we have a very active Facebook page, facebook.com/DeerFarms. People can go there and see the a lot of the reunions. We will document stories of the families who have placed their animals with us, as well as fundraising opportunities, because we are all grassroots funded. We do not take money from municipalities who might then obligate us in some way to follow rules around the management of the animals. Instead, we are able to sort of make decisions about who we accept, not based on breed-restricted rules, for instance, but based on the needs of the family. But it does mean that we have to generate all of our own funding, and so we'll periodically have online fundraising activities. People can simply donate to our website or the Facebook link. But if this is for every person out there, this could be them. Their house could go up in flames in a fire, and they don't have anywhere for their pet to stay. They could lose their home to the next hurricane that hits the coast. They could find themselves in a medical situation where, unfortunately, family and friends are too far away to be able to assist. It's something that should scare every pet owner. I know it scares me. And so, you know, what I want to be able to do is provide the hope that it doesn't have to mean that a catastrophe is going to make you lose your pets, that there would be options. But to continue to be able to offer the service, we have to be able to, we have to have the resources to do it.
Well, I have to say that I visited your Carney's Point location, and just the vibe was amazing. Your staff are incredible with dogs. Even a shy dog, they totally understood. They were just, it's just an amazing comfort for when something like this happens. I saw the visiting hours. I saw all of it. And I saw dogs of every size and stripe and age. And they all were so happy. And that's something that you rarely see at any kind of shelter or kennel situation, whether it's just a kennel for, you know, wealthy people going on vacation, right? Or a shelter where animals are abandoned. So again, we want to underscore that this is not a place for anyone to abandon an animal. It's a place where you really become partners in the care of your animal until you get back on your feet. Right. And
exactly right.
And people are also very encouraged to make donations. Even people who are in trouble and who are leaving their animals are encouraged to make donations when and however much they can. So I encourage all listeners to this show to please consider SeerFarms.org in your giving, whether it's $10 or $1,000 or whatever you can give when the time comes and you feel generous. This is truly a special, special organization. And frankly, I think that you, Laura, should be winning something like a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. So I'm just putting that out there, just to the universe, you know, in the hope that someone hears that. So is there anything else you'd like to talk about? Like, what's the furthest away someone has ever come or a family has ever come seeking help?
Oh, that's actually very interesting. We have had animals from all over the country. We've reunited a cat who came over from Nevada. We had five boxers from Washington who were ultimately reunited with their owner in Washington State. We had a giant St. Bernard puppy from Chicago. We've had cats from Maine. We've had many dogs and cats from Florida. We've had really all over the country, California, because there are very few surf lifeguards around the country. Some are specialized in a particular crisis area, and many of them are so small and foster home-based. And when they're foster home-based, you're restricted in terms of who you can take to what the foster homes in your network are able to accept, which was one of the things that we focused on at the get-go. Was we wanted to make sure that we were going to be able to catch, you know, even if Anna didn't want it, we were going to be able to catch that animal. So it meant that service we offer is different, and we are able to take from all over the country. The trick is we need to have the room available, and we often are so full that we have a waiting list. There are some kennels that will work with us in that they will offer a deeply discounted rate off their normal rates for animals that have been accepted into our program while they're on the waiting list. And we will, the waiting list is, there's no set number of days that you're waiting because it often depends upon the kind of animal and the size of the animal and the challenges associated with the animal. Those who have particular medical issues, we are able to handle, but that involves a certain level of specialization, and I need to make sure that we have someone who is specialized to be able to care for them. We do not accept, unless it is extraordinary circumstances like evacuations during a hurricane, we do not accept reptiles or birds because they are such specialty, they need such specialized care that we do not generally have on-site care able to handle that. But we do have relationships with sanctuaries around the state of New Jersey that will allow us to take them and then place them in those sanctuaries so that they aren't handled on site. We also work with a couple of farms and ranches that will allow us to accept goats, horses, and other farm animals if need be.